Hello.
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 We welcome you today. Hello.
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 We're glad you came our way to share with us. This primary day and be our friends in a very special way.
Hello.
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 We welcome you this today.
Today. Hello. Jeff, that was great. That was very nice. Tremendous.
Accio tremendousness.
Jeff has his wand out again.
Here's the thing, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Mormons, by the way. Thanks for joining us. I have long had Dumbledore's Elder Wand, the most powerful wand in the world, but now Al has startled me in that he is the proprietor of Ron Weasley's wand.
I like the underdog.
Of all the people. What's happened to you?
I like the underdog. I think he's a nice fellow.
Don't you also own a golden snitch now? Isn't that what I've learned?
Jeff, who doesn't have a golden snitch?
Me. You officially have more Harry Potter paraphernalia than I do, which is amazing.
No, so my parents went to Harry Potter World.
Didn't you?
And they messaged me and said, Al, this is my mom. Al, do you need a golden snitch or a Harry Potter wand? And I said,
both?
No, of course. I do not need either of those, but thank you.
Uh-huh.
And then she came home and she got everybody else presents from this place, except for me. Because she said, oh, you said you didn't want one. I said, well, I can't want such a thing. I have no need for it, but I would have liked to have had.
Yeah, sure.
A golden snitch.
Sure.
Or maybe some whizzy fizz bangs or some wombly wooz bats. Or some wimble ding bull dumbos.
Uh-huh.
After chastising them for not purchasing me presents, as any spoiled child would do, my dad, I'm assuming it was my dad, went and got me this wand from online and a golden snitch. Had them shipped to his house, and then they were on my desk when I got home from my trip. Quite delightful, really. I like it.
So did they arbitrarily choose Ron's wand? Is that why they just didn't know which one to get? And they got you Ron.
I think it's because that's my dad's name is Ron.
That's a good point.
I think there's a little bit of He's going to choose the Ron. The ginger Ron would be chosen by the balding Ron.
And could it be?
It's a kinship.
You also used to have more of a ginger beard, so maybe it was that too.
I do have a ginger beard. I have a red beard, absolutely.
I feel like there's
a little Ron Weasley in all of us, I feel.
I mean, your beard used to be like rust color, but now it just seems kind of...
It's lighting. It's definitely still rust color, yeah. Jeff. You can't take this away from me.
Your face is oxidized. Congratulations. Now, Alan, my understanding is you went and just spent a week in Hawaii, living the dream as dreamers live.
Yeah, well, it was Valentine's Day, Jeff. And so I went to Hawaii for a friend's wedding, and I swam, and I body surfed and ate Ted's Bakery pie. And my favorite garlic chicken, as I am prone to do. And then rode motorcycles up to La'ie Falls area. It's quite an adventure. I had a very good time. And then I flew back. I flew back to 10-degree weather in Missouri. The trick, here's the kicker. So I had pieced together, I think I've conveyed before how I enjoy my cheap flights, but I had pieced together sort of a crummy itinerary of landing in Las Vegas at 5:30. PM and then flying out of Las Vegas at 1 a.m. to get in at 5 a.m. in Missouri, about 5:40 or so.
Sure.
So my 1 a.m. flight out of Vegas got delayed until 3:40. Thank you, Spirit Airlines. An almost 4-hour delay, or 3-hour delay, I guess. A little bit crazy. That's a hard delay to swallow when you're like hanging on till 1 a.m. Jeff, you know what this is like. All the Delta Sky Lounges, the Centurion Lounge for American Express, they all close at the latest by 2 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
Then where do I get my free food brought to me on a platter and fresh cookies baked right out of the oven? I mean, I can't be expected to get up and go get a drink. This is ridiculous.
But the upside is Vegas's airport is so close to the Strip that you can, just leave again.
I didn't. Well, I just stayed and worked. And so I emailed away until the wee hours of the morning, and then I flew home, got in, and have worked all day. So now I am sacrificing my nap time to be with you all, and I'm excited to be here. I'm in Missouri. It's freezing here. I'm back. I'm no better than Jeff at this point.
I'm also tired. It's also freezing here. I mean, we don't get it as bad as the Midwest typically during the winter, but this whole
sudden, how cold is it right now?
The actual temperature right now is, it says it is 14 degrees outside, and that is not including the decent wind
the
chill.
The chill of the wind?
Yeah, with the wind chill, it ticks it down pretty low. Our low tonight will be in the negative territory, so that's going to be a lot of fun. So it's been very cold. Actually makes you
all right,
tired.
That is legitimate cold. You are allowed to feel cold.
It's chilly. And then Sunday it's supposed to be 54 and rainy, so I don't, go figure. It's all snowy right now. Just a snowy, icy paradise, but who knows what'll happen. So that's exciting. Over the weekend at church, we had to evacuate our building.
I saw the Instagram. You had firefighters there.
Yeah, so I was in ward council bright and early, and while we're sitting there, the lights just go out. All the power cuts out. So then we sat in a dark bishop's office and just kept talking and counseling with one another. While the bishop kind of ran around trying to figure out what was going on, we decided if the power was out because it was cold, we'd just have sacrament meeting and send everybody on their way, because you don't want to hang out when it's 20 degrees outside with no heat in the building. That's not fun for anybody. So that was the plan. So I went and picked up my wife, came back to church. As we sit down, it smelled rather acrid. It smelled burny in the air. Almost smelled like
It smelled burny.
It smelled like burnt
plastic. It was like a steak well done.
It was like burnt plastic, sort of. And we're sitting there like, what is that? And as I looked around during the sacrament, saw one of my counselors standing in the foyer, and I could see it was smoky, and I was like, that's smoke? And it's like, yeah. And he was grabbing his little kid and just leaving. And so then I went and found the bishop, and he said, yep, we're going to clear out of here. I think one of the generators is on fire. We are going to leave the place. And so then right after the sacrament, I love that our counselor is great. He gets up and just says, like, so on top of the lack of electricity right now, apparently there's a fire in the building. So if Brother So-and-so could just get up and give a closing prayer, then we should all leave. And that's what we did. I've never seen a Mormon congregation rise so quickly and leave a chapel, because we always linger and chit-chat.
Yeah, we're talkers. But they, that's our nature.
We were gone. And then on our way out, the fire department had already showed up. And it must have been a slow Sunday, because they seemed to send every truck they have in the fleet.
And they were, Jeff, when a church is on fire, you protect the church.
I mean, I'd understand if like one truck came in an ambulance. I think we counted, what, six fire trucks, a couple ambulances, some fire marshal guys in the streets directing traffic.
Unless you're there with
stuff.
Your wand to say, Braccio Mimendo.
Yeah.
To heal.
No,
the
you
church.
Say agua menti. I mean, agua menti. That's how you cast the spell for water. You just watched Half Blood Prince. You should remember that spell. Agua menti. Harry tries to cast it when Dumbledore drinks the poison. Do you have some water?
Yeah. Okay.
I thought of a
Bombarda.
Also, I thought of a plot hole in that scene. Harry tries to fill up the trough so he can scoop up the water. Why not just do agua menti from the wand straight into Dumbledore's mouth? Just shoot the water into his mouth. You don't need some cup. Just blast it on in there. Oh, my goodness. So
that would have solved it.
Anyway, so that was interesting. I've never been evacuated from church before. That was the shortest Sunday block ever. Our church starts at 8 a.m. and we were home by 8:30. And that was it.
Defodio.
And then it turns out they solved the problem, and the other wards that met in our buildings had their regular full 3-hour blocks. We just,
man, you guys got the hookup.
I guess
it's always nice to have a little spice to your week, you know. And then you go home and you get to talk about what if we would have burned.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing with church getting out at 11 a.m. now. I feel like I have a lot of time on my hands on Sunday. I still have plenty to do, but I find myself looking at the clock on Sunday and be like, oh my gosh, it's still only like 3 p.m. Like, that, there's so much day. I don't know if other people do this, but in my mind, I don't do much on Sunday until after church. Even last year when I had 3 p.m. church, I felt like I don't go do something before the block. I don't know. You hang out around the house like a bum and then go to church, and then church got out at 6 and you said, well, the day is over. Now I get out at 11, and there's so much day. Just so much day ahead of me on a Sunday.
Tremendous.
And it's cold.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice. The other side of that is when you have church late in the day, like 2 to 5.
I just said 3 to 6. I just said 3 to 6.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, I like those. I actually like that better.
Oh, it's terrible.
Because that, I feel like my whole morning is reclaimed. And I get up, I watch some movie, I do some stuff, I read a book.
Sure.
You know, because your before church hours are a waste. They're a loss.
That's what I'm saying. Your they usually are, yeah.
Your after church hours are the ones that, like, you end up napping and doing whatever else with.
Yes. Which is why I didn't like 3 p.m. church, because then I just kind of wasted my whole day till 3 p.m. Honestly.
No, I loved it because I would read, I would do all these other things. And then when you get home at 6 o'clock, it's like dinner, party with the peeps.
And that's the other downside. You're sitting there trying to make meals, and unless you've crock-potted something, you don't even eat dinner until 7:30 or 8. It's sad.
Unless you crock-pot many things, Jeff.
It was a year of crock-potting last year.
Wait, so how was your week? What did you do for Valentine's Day for your sweet love?
Oh, well, the highlight was the church evacuation, but... for Valentine's Day, we held up the tradition, and we went to Red Robin, because that's what we do.
Pride and Prejudice?
No, we went to Red Robin. Oh. We went to Red Robin.
That is a terrible tradition.
Every year, my wife and I go to Red Robin.
It's a genius move on your part that's like a candlelit dinner at the Waffle House.
Exactly.
I mean, it's total cost you $20.
With tip,
milkshake.
I walk away spending about $25 for two people.
Yeah, no, brilliant, but... For sure, she does not feel loved.
No, she does, because it's like it goes back to when we were dating. So there's symbolism. There's nostalgia there. So we go and we enjoy.
Yeah, when you were, it lets you always remember when you were poor.
And
you had to eat as peasants.
Every day when I look at my bank account, I'm still reminded.
That's how you stay true to your roots, Jeff. Attaboy.
Believe Red Robin is still very much in my budget wheelhouse. There's nothing has changed. That is what we do.
It's like, would you ever consider a Valentine's Day at maybe Chili's or an Applebee's?
No. We did splurge. The hard thing is our anniversary is only about a month before Valentine's Day, so I do more then.
A month? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's only a month before Valentine's Day, so our anniversary
Jeff, that
this
is
year.
Plenty of time to recover and have another fun night out.
No, you can only afford one expensive night per year. Last year was my wife's 30th. We had a very nice dinner. This year, anniversary. Like, there are only certain occasions when I'll spend.
You're willing to spend $50 on a night?
No.
Once
on our, our anniversary dinner cost me over $100. Money well spent. That's just how. Was it 100? Yeah, that's a lot of money. 70, 80, I don't know what it was. Whatever. My wife's birthday, she was on a business trip, so we tapped into her per diem. Very classy. Said, honey, enjoy this fancy meal. By the way,
on the company,
let's pay for half of it with your per diem. It's going to be great. What a great day.
I like that.
Other than that, my life is normal. My life is
maybe. Would you mind if I took your wife to Hawaii for a Valentine's Day one year? I mean, just
sure. You can take her. Go for it.
I just want to, you know, I just think it'd be fun. It'd be fun. You stay home.
Here's one thing I want to know. What do you do if someone you home teach asks to no longer be home taught and they're not active? They straight up say, I don't want any more church contact.
Well, so I mean,
and you've had
first
a, and you've had a good
you respect their wishes.
And I mean, that's all you can do. And you've had a good relationship with them. You have home taught them consistently for years. And then they suddenly turn around and say, I don't want anything to do with it anymore, but it's been great.
My move would be to try and at least keep the relationship there. Say, hey, could I just come over as a friend? No message, no prayer, no anything. Can I just come hang out with you once a month and just make sure that you're not dead? I feel like most people would say yes to that.
Well, especially the not dead part. If I throw that into any invitation, I think it's hard to say no.
May I confirm that you are not dead yet?
I should have used that when I was dating. Like, hey, I'd just like to take you out and just make sure you're not dead, just to make sure your health is okay. That's all I care about.
Why am I outside your window? Well, there's a number of reasons. The primary one being to confirm that you are not dead
yet. I am making
yet.
Sure that I see your diaphragm expanding as you sleep, that you are indeed alive.
And you're doing a great job. In fact, you're flushed now and angry. I can see that all the systems are working as usual. I'll be on my way now.
All right. Well, we got some Mormon news. We should dive
in. I feel like that. I mean, that's the primary thing. And then because otherwise you end up with them on the special list for the bishop to go see only when he is called as a new bishop.
Yeah. And the worst thing is you don't want the whole ward to suddenly descend upon somebody, you know, like, oh, pull out the big guns, everybody. Let's all get in on it.
Yeah, do not pull out the BGs.
These are things I've had to deal with in talking to the brethren in my quorum, you know, with their home teaching and stuff. And, you know, they ask me these questions like, hey, this is going, like, what do I do? So that's why I floated it by you. I float it by our listeners because I think every situation is different. But it's hard to say because, like, when you're a missionary and someone tries to back off on the discussions, you know, you don't just say, well, okay, you pretty much try to work pretty hard to keep them back in. But then at the same time, yeah. You see how sometimes almost like manipulative that could sort of be perceived. So I don't know.
Well, I like the model of in the church, our job's not to like, we don't get any points for tricking them into letting us keep coming. If they're feeling like that relationship's being abused at all, we need to change the nature of the relationship and continue to be their friend and be supportive. You know, do as much as we can to like be a good Christian to them, and then let them sort of be drawn to the Savior as they would be. I like that.
Yep.
I like it a lot.
So I know that's been on my mind. I like it when my brethren have questions for me, though. It makes me it makes me think. I don't always know the answers, you know. It makes me think about things I don't always think about naturally, and so it helps me to enrich myself from a gospel perspective and learning a bit more about what we can do.
Well, you've done a tremendous job. You are right. We have Mormon news. We have things like the Mormon Bachelorette is back. We have a Finnish, or is it Norwegian?
Belgian.
Belgian?
Yeah.
Belgian guy makes a little TV clip about being with the missionaries. We got a bishop who has a love affair with a Reuben sandwich and many more things.
Having a love affair with this ice cream sandwich.
I feel like we need transition music, and now we can play it. We'd be like, back with you in 2 minutes. Thanks for waiting, everybody. So this week there's a great story of this host, apparently a Belgian man. I didn't realize. No, it's Flemish.
That's Belgium.
That is?
I don't have time to explain geopolitics to you. Yes.
Wait, just give me the Reader's Digest version.
Okay, Belgium, no offense to anybody who loves Belgium. Belgium basically shouldn't be a country. So half of the country is Flanders, the northern part. And that's what people are Flemish. From Flanders, they speak Dutch, or some might say they speak Flemish, but they basically speak Dutch.
I'd say
and
Flemish.
So they share a border with the Netherlands, and they share a lot with them, okay? The other half of Belgium speaks French, Wallonia. Wallonia is traditionally a bit poorer than Flanders. Flanders is where all the big cities are, and there are many who advocate Wallonia seceding and being absorbed by France.
If there are any women who have bedspreads made in the shape of a world map, they have never been more turned on than right now, Jeff.
Yeah.
I promise you this. Anyway, so this Flemish TV show.
The Wallonia flag is also of a rooster, if that helps you feel.
Yayan, he has this experiment where he says yes to everything. So he's making this show. What happens when I say yes?
What about
he flips a coin.
To the dress?
He does. He says yes to the dress. Also, he goes out and he sort of forces some missionaries to say, to ask him a question, so he says yes to. I was expecting them to approach him. He had to approach them, those slackers. But the missionaries were actually great in this. So he goes to the missionaries, and they're like, hey, can we come share a lesson with you? And he's like, sure. And then they were like, you know, do you wanna try out what we do? And he said, sure. And so they go talk to him for a little bit. They dress him up in a shirt and tie, and he walks around with them handing out the I'm a Mormon cards, little pass-along cards.
Yeah.
And he gets sort of a little bit of a taste of it. And it's kind of an interesting show because I would expect more Jim Carrey yes man antics to happen, right? That's what I was anticipating.
Or liar.
Instead, it's yes, and then just sort of see what happens. And it was a surprisingly touching segment. The man at the end, like, he has a lot of questions for them. You can tell it's one of the first times that he's had, like, a religious conversation with somebody in a while. And so, and the missionaries did a tremendous job of articulating the LDS views and how we can convey those and offer them up to people. I thought they did a really good job.
Me too. That's one thing I was actually really impressed with. As I've
could have been a little more bold, maybe.
Yes and no. But I thought they were good. I liked the way they introduced topics of the gospel. I've spent lots of time with missionaries, and you know, there's sometimes when it just seems like you are reciting a concept without really thinking of a way to make it resonate with somebody. And I liked their approach, just the way they explained concepts to people and talked to people in the street.
Yep.
And I love Jan. What a great guy. Yeah, I mean, he was game. Right? The missionaries, for one, straight up say, all right, come with us. And then they suit him up. And Jan doesn't just follow him around. They have him giving out pass-along cards to the folks on the streets and sort of just trying to talk about stuff. And it's...
No, he crushed it.
It was really, really, really well done. And I guess there's a little bit of a follow-up to the story. Apparently, because when you see him meet the missionaries in the train station and they get his phone number, I believe this was actually around transfers, which might explain why there were a bunch of missionaries all standing around speaking English. And so what happened is the missionaries they focused in on later on, that elder actually got transferred. But because they knew it was this cool opportunity, the mission president, I think he got transferred somewhere to the Netherlands. The mission president let him come back to the city in Belgium and meet up with a guy and film the segment, even though he wasn't serving in that area anymore. Just because they...
No way.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. We should try. I think I saw means by which we could contact him. Maybe he's home now. We should get him on the show. Tell us about his experience being a superstar.
Get him, Jeff.
Speaking of missionaries, if you've been to Albuquerque lately, don't. But because if you do, you might be held captive by Irwin Smith, who allegedly held missionaries captive for over 3 hours in his northeast Albuquerque apartment. Apparently, the missionaries saw the guy and were just trying to be helpful and wanted to help him move. And Irwin took it upon himself to drink a lot and make suicidal statements. The missionaries then went for their A game and went and got a DVD from their car to watch with him to console him.
At this point, you better call Saul.
Yes.
You better call Saul.
At this point, Smith is even more bothered by the DVD, which, you know, undoubtedly was the Testaments or something like that. And he turned it off.
It was legacy, I bet.
He turned it off, and then apparently he said he was going to kill them and do this and that, and the missionaries escaped when he went to get a knife from the kitchen when Mr. Smith did that. And now Mr. Smith has been charged with kidnapping and endangerment.
Did you ever have scary things like this happen on your mission?
I was never Saratov'd. No, I was never kidnapped.
I had one that's quasi-terrifying of where we were like in this guy's apartment. And he kept turning up the TV real loud, and I think the mafia was trying to hit his house while we were in there.
Oh, good.
It was very scary. It was very scary.
I was.
And sort of the same thing. Like, we kept trying to leave, and he's like, I don't think so, boys. And we're like, what? And he's like, boys. Boys. And I was like, no. This isn't happening. Expecto Patronum.
That would actually be very useful right there. A Patronus would be very good.
Yeah, if I would have had my Patronus, which, of course, is a grizzly bear.
Naturally.
At the time, everything would
good
be different.
Good point, Al.
No, but like, as missionaries, it's such a hard mix, right? Like, like you're supposed to go into these terribly awkward situations. I mean, things that are never okay outside of being a missionary. Follow some guy from a bus stop home to help him move? You don't do that. If you don't know the guy, you keep walking. You understand me? You keep walking. You know, offer him a hand with the box that's on the street. But if he needs to move, he needs to call some movers or ask his friends. And so you just don't find yourself in these situations. It's why you have so many great stories as a missionary. But also, there's some legitimate danger there.
Totally.
And especially now that these missionaries are 18, they're weak. I mean, there's no muscles on an 18-year-old. They're just these sort of... The word in Ukrainian is hudanky, just these sort of weak, waifish gentlemen.
Wait a minute,
gentlemen.
The word is hudanky?
Hudanky.
That sounds made up. Hudanky.
Hudanky. It's like waifish.
So you would say that about like Yanukovych, for example.
Be
like,
yeah, Yanukovych. Slabanky, hudanky. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we got these little children out there essentially trying to fend for themselves. That's one danger. I wonder if the brethren thought of how weak these young men are. I wonder. But anyway, it makes for a great story, and they're alive. They should have pressed charges, and then they would have been able to go and teach him in the jail,
like they do in Utah.
Yeah, two birds with one stone.
My mission president was actually kidnapped, so we heard about that. He served in Chile during the Pinochet regime, and he was kidnapped for like a couple weeks, something like that.
Weeks?
It was a while. That'd be terrifying. Man, that'd be terrifying. Chile or Russia or Albuquerque. Whatever you need.
Any of those three.
Yes.
If you're hanging out with Tuco in the kitchen and he's going for a knife, you get out of there, young man.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that all he wants to do is make some pico de gallo for his abuelita. You don't do that.
Yeah.
You stay away from Tuco and his precious abuelita.
All right, we got some. So Jeff, you put up an article on the sex lives of Mormons. I thought this was fairly interesting. Okay. I made it about halfway through the video. It got boring.
It gets progressively more graphic, though. That's half the fun.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I left. You made an interesting point in your little write up on it, which I appreciated, of sort of the Doctrine and Covenants is always interesting, because when we talk about the Doctrine and Covenants, we know or we go after the doctrine in the Doctrine and Covenants. We don't pay very much attention to the covenants side of it. Oftentimes we find ourselves in a mix. And the example you used was the Word of Wisdom. The Word of Wisdom, we look very quickly at the doctrine of the Word of Wisdom, which is don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. The covenant available to us in the Word of Wisdom is if we do good things, the blessings we get, as well as abstaining from the bad things, and like how that relationship works. Similar to the law of chastity, often we look at only what we are to abstain from and not what the law of chastity as a whole is trying to promote, which is that the love and the intimacy that is to be had within the bounds of marriage, right? And so if you look at, just about looking at the do nots, it's also about looking at the do's and how you could promote some of that stuff. So there's a Huffington Post sort of panel they put together where they had a couple of women and men and one gay man, which was an interesting addition to the panel, all talking about sort of the law of chastity and the sex lives of Mormons inside of Mormondom. And I felt like they treated it pretty fairly. It's funny because they were looking for like some sort of dirt, and I feel like any religion's sex life is probably going to be very similar to the next. You know, like, isn't a Baptist couple going to have the same kind of sex that a Mormon couple is going to have as a Catholic couple is going to have? I mean, maybe birth control limits and stuff change here and there, but isn't most of this stuff the same? There's no like I felt like she was looking for like the secret moves that Mormons have, and we don't. That's not a thing. That's not a thing, Jeff. No? You not agree? Are you yes? Are you no?
I'm with you. I'm with you all the way, my friend. I think it's I don't know how it would be with every other faith. I think within Mormonism, because we are so, we prize our virtues so much that I do think we have a bit of a cultural hurdle to overcome, in that many people, especially women, do feel awkward once the reins are gone, and you can have your fun. People feel guilty. They feel strange because we're taught to believe that sex is bad. Not that sex is, I should say it's culturally we're taught that. I think we have plenty of good lessons that illustrate the very true point that sex is totally good and healthy. You just have to save it for the right time. And it's very easy.
I feel like we do a lot better job of that now than we maybe ever have in the history of our church.
So do I. And I think we're getting better, but I think we're still working out, and it will take some time, the fact that a lot of people just kind of grow up just thinking sex equals bad. And so all of a sudden, you go to a temple, you get married, you flip a switch, and now sex equals good. I can just roll with it. I think it's hard for some people. And the video was interesting. It did get progressively more graphic. They talked about, even like masturbation. They talked about all sorts of interesting things. And they did go for some gotcha moments, but she steered the conversation towards garments. I thought it's sort of related, but not really. But either way, I think it was a worthwhile 30 minutes to just see the thoughts of some people who work in that professionally. And these are all active Latter-day Saints, including a BYU professor, who were just saying, like, guys, yeah, take your covenant seriously. But we often romanticize these notions of what it's going to be like to get married, what our wedding night's going to be like, how stuff should be, and we forget that that's not really true to life or what it should be. You know, intimacy isn't just about the physical nature of things; it's about emotional intimacy as well, very much coupled with
yeah,
it. It's not just a physical act, and it's not something that should be. It's going to be awkward. If you're not when you get married, any of you who aren't married listening, it's awkward. So don't.
I don't believe that.
It
Jeff.
Is.
I do not believe that.
It is, and you have to have a good sense of humor. You have to have a good sense. I'm serious. You should have a good sense of humor about it because ideally, you're two people who have no idea what you're doing, and so you should have a good sense of humor in trying to figure out what works best for your relationship and doing
all right. I appreciate that this is a little bit autobiographical, but still. So I mean the thing that I took away from it was wherever there are laws or covenants to be made, there's the positive side and the negative side, and
mm-hmm.
It's easy for us to focus on the sins of omission and skip over the sins of commission. Do I have that right? Maybe backwards. One or the other.
Well, no, I guess
one of them is one of them is the right way. Anyway, it was a good write up. Good job, Jeff.
Thank you.
We'll catch it.
Speaking of dating, for those of you who want to be tortured, the LDS Bachelorette is back. Many of you likely saw that we wrote about this earlier in the week. It's no longer the Mormon Bachelorette because the church actually contacted them and requested that they remove Mormon from the name.
For real?
For real. And make it LDS. We saw this, of course, before with the Mormon Match dating site. And my sources tell me that the church is likely sort of going off the smaller, weaker ones before gearing up to make a run at such sites like LDS Singles and really just try to own it.
Mormon Stories, things
like
that.
Yeah, I feel like if you want to go after the ones that could be a problem, why go after something as innocuous as the Mormon Bachelorette? I mean, I know why they don't go after Mormon Stories. It would be bad press. You know, it would leak very quickly and people would say, oh, now the church is trying to regulate what they can even call the show, right?
But so
anyway, so it's
so the LDS Bachelorette is under new ownership.
Yeah, so or new direction by the LDS matchmaker,
which has essentially turned it into a big promo reel for the LDS matchmaker. And what's interesting is I recognize several of the people in these videos. I know Lauren; she was in my old singles ward. I know Anthony White, one of the gentlemen in one of the videos. He was in an old BYU Hawaii ward of mine. As the Mormon world goes, you will see people that you know in these
things.
That's
true.
And these are all, they're trying. And so they've got like, it's a weird mix. They've got five bachelorettes all looking for love. All being matched up by pro matchmakers and people that are going to give them makeovers.
Well, it's so grating because they even say like, "What you're going to see is an abbreviated version of the program we offer." But I'm like, "What? Come on, Tony Robbins, what is this?" I feel like I'm in the ballroom at the Residence Inn next to the airport, getting pitched something. I just want to watch the dumb show. I know how dumb it is.
Let me in.
It's ever been to me, and I know it sucks me, and I think it's hilariously amusing. Now it's just like what, and they've actually since we wrote about this, they've published the first real date, which is 20 minutes long, of people walking around some pond in Springville.
Wait, just random people or one?
No,
date?
No, it's Cassidy, and she goes out with JR, whom I found out in the write up. I couldn't tell what he wanted to do. He kind of slurred through it, and I thought he said something about obesity management, but that's actually true. He's all about studying wealth and obesity management. And so they just – all I see when I want to watch these videos is I want to just scream at all of them and say, dudes, just go to lunch. That's all you have to do. We have this problem in Mormon culture where we feel the need – especially because we say, you know, what, planned, paid
for. Oh, the elaborate date?
Planned, paid epidemic? For. So planned means like, oh, no, we can't just go talk. We have to go in a canoe and then do chalk drawings and have a picnic that I brought.
I'm so glad that I'm past the the teen slash early 20s dating saga where everything was like, it's a Clue mystery.
Yeah, everything
game,
is a production.
Carving ice cream. And,
yeah. It's just like, and it's, I think it is frustrating because we are told that, you know, it should be planned. Like, as I think it's Elder Oaks, you know, what are the three P's? Planned, paid for, and, or.
And priesthood, yeah.
I don't think he said that. But.
I don't know.
Either way, guys, you know what's the best? Just lunch dates. Lunch dates are the future. If any of you need dating advice from me.
Or dinner dates. I mean, dinner's not bad.
Dinner
either.
Is also great. I find lunch to be particularly effective because.
Breakfast means you're not interested, but you're saying yes because you feel
guilty. Everyone likes breakfast. Lunch means you have a busy schedule, but you want to spend your free hour with this one person. And if it sucks, it's over in an hour. It's perfect.
Yes,
great, you're left wanting more. You don't wear out the welcome. You say, oh, well, I would like to do dinner now. I would like to spend more time with this person. Don't spend your time at a pond in Springville.
Okay, anyway.
So depressing. I will be watching this.
Let's see, BYU, the Ad Lab made a heart pinata for desperate singles that hate Valentine's Day to beat. Well done, BYU.
We actually had a Facebook listener, Greg. Because I believe I described it in the article as, you know, there are a few places with as much pent-up sexual and emotional aggression as BYU. And I stand by that comment. Of course we have that. Just because you keep the commandments doesn't mean you don't have pent-up sexual aggression, right?
Yes, go on.
Well, he basically said something. One of our people there said something like, that so keeping the law of chastity is supposed to make people feel this way as if, you know, like... Like, we're making fun of people for keeping the law of chastity. I would never make fun of anyone for keeping the law of chastity. The law of chastity is wonderful, and when lived properly, is delightful and helps people. However, oh, that's what it says. The Lord's law of chastity.
Yeah, we get it, Jeff.
I think it's funny. Like, why would you assume just because you're keeping the commandments, it doesn't mean you're still going to have pent-up desire? Come on.
Easy. Move on. Move along now. Nothing to see here.
Did you know that Mitt Romney is not a terrorist?
Come again.
Mitt Romney, it turns out, is not a terrorist per Senator Ted Cruz. This will be brief, but he basically wants to say to Muslims to pretty much get your stuff together and quit being so sensitive, using the example of Mitt Romney by saying, look, the Book of Mormon is on Broadway, and it ridicules and makes fun of the Mormon faith. And last time I checked, Mitt Romney didn't show up on Broadway and try to blow up the stage, which, as far as I know, is true.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet. Actually a decent, I mean, I don't disagree with his point. He's Ted Cruz is not the most even keel young man, but it's a fair point.
We could all deal with moderation, but yeah.
So there is a poll put out. Do you know who did the poll, Jeff? Did you see
I think
that?
The poll was actually done by Relationships in America.
So we have no idea what the actual data was behind this, but Relationships in America did a poll, and they were looking at religions and their belief in the afterlife and in the resurrection. So they just asked people, "Do you believe in heaven and hell?" And then they correlated that with like church attendance, mm-hmm. and then they looked at specific religions for belief in the afterlife. Which Mormons, I mean, we just kill it. 97% of people that are Mormon believe in an afterlife.
I liked the question about the resurrection of the dead, which I don't imagine there's much data on. And we also, Mormons are doing very well on that one. By far, amongst those who attend services at least three times per month, 94% believe
we are crushing
in the resurrection.
In
the fundamentalist Protestant comes up second place, a full like almost 10 points behind. What's interesting here, though, and some of our Facebook followers made the same point, it's interesting, though, that you could say people who consider themselves active, engaged Mormons, out of those people, still 6% of them are saying they don't believe in the resurrection.
Yeah.
Or 3% of them don't believe in the afterlife or aren't sure, you know?
Well, it's not so crazy, though. I mean, that's a few people... you know, believing in their faith or attending and doubting the core principles of it.
Yeah, well, I think
that's actually a fair...
I think there are plenty of people who have a hope, but it would not rock me to understand that people who are active and are totally all for the church and love it might still like harbor some doubts and say like, you know, it still like nags away at me. Like, what if there isn't something after we die?
Yeah.
I think I could understand that. I could totally understand that if people felt that way. I think I myself have experienced such concerns at some point. You know, it's just weird. Sometimes you ponder your mortality and no, but seriously, and you think like, dude, what if like really there wasn't something else afterwards? And then that you realize how sad that is. And it's just, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now to switch over to other religions, I love Jewish food. A Reuben is one of the best sandwiches in the world. As long as it's good.
Yeah.
Pastrami, some coleslaw, some rye, some Russian dressing.
A little sauerkraut.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Sauerkraut more than coleslaw. It's just so much delicious stuff. And a fine former bishop in Utah has now opened a deli. And this isn't totally relevant to anything, except it's great that Utah doesn't have much Jewish food because there are only 6,000 Jews in all of Utah to begin with. And this guy, Randy Harmson, just straight up said he was kind of bored by what represented the soul food of Mormons. You know, lots of sugary stuff, fried, you know, the typical Mormon cuisine. He was very fascinated by Jewish cuisine. And he studied it and fell in love with it and decided that he wanted to open a deli in Salt Lake City where you can go today and have a Reuben or with some pastrami.
What?
I don't know if you can get a Monte Cristo, though, but, you know, you could just keep trying.
What is it? What's it called?
The Ninth South Deli. It's in the ninth area. There's some, that's some neighborhood in Salt Lake. It's in Salt Lake.
I want to go to there.
Well, you don't live there anymore, Al, so you can't. How does that make you feel? Terrible.
I will still go there.
It's on 9th South and basically just past 9th East.
That is actually true, right? Like if you were a Mormon,
that's a way up,
and wanted to open, you moved to a predominantly Mormon neighborhood and you wanted to open a restaurant catering Mormon style food. What would you serve?
Marshmallows and Jello.
the funeral potatoes for sure.
Oh,
but I mean, like it's stuff that's sort of that we sort of joke about rather than we genuinely love to eat. You know, you go to New York and I mean, the bagel shop on every corner sort of thing is there because it's big in Israel. Like that's the thing. That's the thing.
Well, bagels are big in Jewish culture. It's not just Israel. I don't even think bagels started in Israel. I imagine they started somewhere in Central Europe, I believe.
Well, that's probably true, Jeff. But it's the Jews that love them. And Jews are from Jerusalem, as we all know.
Okay, 20% of Israel is Russian. But okay, keep going. Keep going. I like where you're going with this.
So you go to Salt Lake City, and what do you – I mean, you just don't have – maybe Cafe Rio, that might be the closest thing
to Mormon, like Mormon cuisine.
Yeah. Would you agree, Cafe Rio?
I feel like Cafe Rio is the official chain of Mormons. Yes.
In-N-Out Burgers.
Like, because when you think about it, no, you can't claim it. You can't claim these other fast food places or chains that don't come from you. You could claim KFC, maybe, but I don't think Mormons like have the thing for KFC, but the first one was in Salt Lake. But I think Cafe Rio is a fair one. Few chains to me say, like, this is a Mormon organization as Cafe Rio.
Fat Cats.
Yeah, but Fat Cats hasn't jumped elsewhere. It's just in Utah. Cafe Rio, you can get Cafe Rio in California. You can get it right here 15 minutes from my house in Virginia. Cafe Rio is the Mormon food export to the world.
Nailed it.
Thank you.
Nailed it.
Stuck the landing.
Not a whole lot else that we want to talk about this week, is there?
Prime Minister David Cameron of the United Kingdom received his genealogy, but President Uchtdorf and Monson or Eyring did not fly to the UK to present it to him, unfortunately, because he is not Obama. Instead, it was some members of the area presidency named Clifford and Patrick. And that's it. Though I've met Elder Patrick Kieron. Kieron's a great guy. So they presented him with his genealogy and, you know, showed him his line. And if it's, and they said, hey, look, you're British. Look at your ancestors from Britain.
Yeah. No good. I think it's cool that they do that stuff for people. I wouldn't know what to do with my genealogy if you gave it to me in a big binded book.
I think they should take some bolder moves. Like, present the genealogy to, like, the King of Jordan.
You remember when they did that they did that show back in the day where they, like, they took Ellen DeGeneres and found her family and like, found her stories?
Yeah, wasn't that,
and
you mean
stuff.
Back in the day, wasn't that on, like, last year?
Yeah, like on NBC.
Yeah, I forgot
something.
What it was called. I remember Sarah Jessica Parker was involved at some point.
Yeah, Brian Williams.
Oh, well, we don't talk about him anymore. He's gone.
But why?
Because he lied to us all, Al. He lied to all
I don't feel lied to because he
who
told
would
that
forget
story?
About being in a chopper that was shot down?
That was one time he was not in the chopper that got shot down, and everybody's freaking out.
Every other time the chopper did get shot down. Okay, guys?
That's right. That's absolutely right. But like, I mean, that kind of stuff would be cool if you, like, took them on a journey and made it a big thing.
Because that's what the Prime Minister has time for. Come on our show, produced by the church, and we're going to walk you through your family history.
It's called Meet the Mormon Sympathizers.
It'll air on the Mormon Channel on their some of the random stuff they broadcast, and nobody will see it. It'll be great.
Let's see. On public radio, there was a story this week on the bloody history of Mormonism in Jackson County. This is a story that I think needs to be told more. It is not known by the people. Like, anywhere outside of Mormondom, the fact that I mean, there was massacres and huge exoduses and extermination orders is unknown. And the fact that existed in our country, I think, needs to be talked about a little bit more and understood.
Well, what's there to understand then? What are the salient points here? You're a Missourian. What are we going to talk about? Like, the Mormons themselves were violent? Like, is that why it's so important?
No, well, I mean, it's essentially it's the Mormon story of coming to Missouri and the gathering and the effect of the gathering on the local citizens and what they were scared of and what the Mormons were scared of. You know, they essentially drove them out of Jackson County into Clay County, and then from there went up to Caldwell County, where they created a place for them to be. Then the drama continued, but, like, the problem was that they were moving this massive, like, 5,000 members of the church into a city, which at the time, I mean, Chicago was like 5,000 people or 10,000 people, like a big city. You put 5,000 people next to anywhere, and that was something that they were going to notice, and it was going to be a big deal. So the fact that they came there, then were driven out of there in Caldwell County, Governor Boggs puts an extermination order out against the Mormons. The Mormons do have, like, they fight back. There's a Mormon war, all that kind of stuff. Then they're driven out, you know, raped, plundered, pushed out of the state into Quincy, Illinois, up into Nauvoo. From Nauvoo, it happens again. They go out west to Salt Lake. There, like for a religious group in our country, I don't think that there's very many that have been put through so much strife, so much persecution, and a lot of people they don't realize, they have no idea. They have no idea why we are in Salt Lake City in the first place, right? When really we should be, if we could, in Kirtland, Ohio, and then in Jackson County. That's where we want to be.
Zion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good for people to know. I also think in many ways this the mentality we have in the church visiting our history kind of always sets ourselves up as these, you know, the pariahs in that sense. And while I think I 100% agree, of course, that we received pretty poor treatment. You know, I mean, crazy atrocities happened to us. And I'm with you, Al. That hasn't really happened to other faith groups. Though we do sometimes leave out of the equation that we were also sort of difficult, quarrelsome neighbors oftentimes. Like, because how would you feel if the Mormons swoop into town and become those powerful voting bloc in the area?
Really good. I'd feel great.
Yeah, now you would. But so it's another good thing to remember that, you know, sometimes even as Latter-day Saints, we would, I think, also get ahead of ourselves and... You know, it's like anybody else, you know, we're human, right? We would sit there and think, like, of course, we're the Lord's people. We're here doing the good work. Everyone should understand this. And then we get confused why that bothers people. And then they want to punch us or burn our stuff down.
Yeah.
But I do think church history is a fascinating thing. And I have a lot more I want to learn about it as well. I feel like my knowledge is fine, but there's so much more I can do. I loved it when I was out visiting you a couple of years ago. being able to see, you know, Adam on Diamond or the Far West Temple site, all these things that dot the whole area out there that are just steeped in history of the church. And it's all just there. And so much of it is doesn't involve a visitor center or anything. It's just land the church owns and it's open and you can go check it out. And there might be some plaques to explain some stuff.
Or random monuments to the three witnesses.
Yeah, it's pretty.
To the eight witnesses.
Missouri is heaven. Congratulations, Al. You've done it.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, my last thing here. The church has opened this interactive family discovery center in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building. I'm assuming down in the whole genealogy layer down there. It's pretty cool, though. It's basically like building an interactive museum exhibit geared around genealogy where you can discover your own roots, see pictures, see how people even dressed, mock-ups, learn history about your family. It's a very cool interactive way to get people jazzed about family history. This is the approach that's going to push us forward, I think. You know, well, because we talk about it all the time before. It's like, everybody, come in here. Let's do some indexing. And yeah. No, this is the stuff that will take genealogy more mainstream in the church and actually make genealogy cool. And I love seeing them take those steps to do that because it makes it way more appetizing to everybody else.
Yeah, I was actually... I mean, I don't think that it's more appetizing. I don't think that there's anything... I mean, I don't know.
I think it gets people more interested. I mean, the whole goal, all of the reason we do all of this is because we want people to look up names and take names to the temple. That's the end game with all of this, right? And so we can either harp on it and encourage people to get on the new familysearch.org and enjoy a complimentary ancestry.com account, which is all great. And I think those have served a great purpose, and they continue to do so. But something like this that's interactive, I think it's...
So do they need to make this mobile? Is this going to go all over the
world? I think they said this was sort of their prototype one, so I wouldn't be surprised if visitor centers, some of the bigger temple visitor centers, perhaps got a similar exhibit at some point. I could easily see them muscling that into the DC Temple Visitor Center somewhere, for example. And why not? It shows what we're all about as Mormons. We're all about families, knowing your history, linking the generations together. It's what we want to do. So, I think it's cool. I wish I was in Salt Lake. I'd love to go check it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll take a look next time in there.
You don't go there anymore.
Anyway. All right. Well, it's been delightful to spend this hour with you. You know, I think very highly of you,
like,
Jeff. Even though you go to Red Robin on Valentine's Day, I like you as a person.
Like the Nephites, this has been fair and delightsome. Yes, sir.
All right, man. Well, everybody, you know you can reach us, contact at thisweekinmormons.com. We love to hear from you. A lot of good listener chatter this week. Thank you. Keep it up.
Indeed.
Also, go to thisweekinmormons.com. Leave comments there. Engage with your fellow listeners.
Yeah.
Argue. Yeah. Talk amongst yourselves.
Lots of fighting. That's what we want to see. And join us on all the various social media outlets, whether that's Facebook or Twitter, Instagram, Google+, YouTube, all that stuff. Appreciate you being there with us. And stick around. Join us again next week. It's going to be good times. Make it.